Welcome to the AI. Spreading the podcast for Lucy and Anne.
Hello.
Hey, welcome to the AI Readiness Podcast. We are people who talk about AI adoption in an amusing and informative and practical way, desirous to help you do the same for your organizations and your life. I'm Andrew, and this is Lucy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is episode 9.
Nine, and Rich is flicking the switches and twiddling the what's-its.
The knobs.
That's me, and I might say bananas.
Yeah, thanks. If we get too technical, Rich is going to keep us honest. Thank you. What's coming up, Lucy?
So coming up in this show, so DeepSeek, just another model? Should we really care? Should we be scared? Conversations in the field, of course. We all know I love to be in a field. And we've got some eye-opening stats from our immersion journey with a construction consultancy. So we're going to be deep diving into that. Adventures in AI, of course. We always share some of the tips and tricks that we've recently come across. And this week we've been testing Google's Gemini and comparing it to Perplexity for deep research.
Yeah, and there's a new addition to that fold, which we will reveal shortly. We're very excited about.
Hot off the press. Yeah. And something new this week, a how-to. I think it will be really useful for people who are struggling with the authenticity. You know, ChatGPT sounds like, it feels like it's cheating and it's coming out with garbage and the AI slop. We're going to give people a how-to prompt.
Yeah. And like, if I see another, sorry to hijack the what's coming up, but like if I see another LinkedIn post about bloody,
hey, you can spot the ChatGPT content because it's got hyphens and
we know, we get, you know, stop it already. Stop writing that. You know, you are contributing to the AI slop by putting LinkedIn posts about AI slop on LinkedIn, right? Put solutions in. Don't stop moaning about it. Sorry.
Adding slop to slop. It's sloppy.
They're slopping the slop. Like I'm slopped up.
I think that's enough of what's coming up in the show. But bottom line is loads of laughter and fun to help support the learning.
Absolutely. Having said that, our podcast coach, Dirk, who is a legend in the broadcasting industry, did say, go for a wry smile. It's less effort. So let's go for wry smiles. Right. If we get a laugh out of each other, it's a bonus. Breaking news. Do-do-do-do. I just want you to know that sound, I make it happen with a foot pedal. Like I've got a special foot pedal for the breaking news. I'm very excited about it. Borrowed it from a sewing machine. Anyway, so DeepSeek, right? Everyone's been going on about it. It's sort of settled down a little bit now, but the Chinese have created a large language model. Oh no. You know, and if you look at the rhetoric in the media, it's like, oh, if you put your Google passwords in, it pops up in China and they log into your account and everything's going to be... There's a little bit of knicker twisting going on, don't you think?
I do, and I was guilty of that right at the start because that was where my head went and a little bit kind of like, ooh. What I wasn't appreciating was the need for diversity in AI models because, let's face it, OpenAI et al. Have, except Anthropic's Claude, but have been developed by American kind of Western mindset.
Yeah, and do you remember that workshop we did with that publishing company down in Oxfordshire where a Chinese participant said, I find that if I ask ChatGPT stuff about China, there's a very Western skew to it. Yeah. Remember that? So it's just the same thing happening the other way around.
And I think she also said that the login, she was struggling, it wouldn't let her log in because it didn't recognise a Chinese email address.
Yeah. And I tried to get into ChatGPT when I did a layover in China on the way to somewhere a couple of years ago, and it wouldn't let me log in. Anyway, I'm getting lost in the weeds, right? So what's our take on it, right? What an interesting take is that it was actually a financial attack on NVIDIA. So NVIDIA are the organization who have got trillions of gazillions of dollars because they're making these amazing chips that do AI stuff. You can actually get a computer now with 4 NVIDIA chips on it, shove it in your house, and it's got a large language model on it. Brilliant. Costs you about 30 grand. And so these lot said, actually, you don't need those fancy chips. Ours is much more simple and it's cheaper to operate and everything. And so the NVIDIA share price went boom, down. So some people are arguing that the concerted media kind of attack on DeepSeek was actually people shorting NVIDIA stock, which is a really interesting way of thinking about it. And you can sort of build on that. Oh, go on.
No, and as they say, there's no PR that's bad PR.
No, unless you work for NVIDIA, obviously.
Yeah, stop but they didn't drive it, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But then along comes Alibaba, you know, so the Chinese organization that sells and wholesales loads of stuff has gone, well, we've done one. But there's loads. Like the Mistral, the French one, nobody complains about them going, you know, they're going to teach us all about, insert French xenophobia comment here, you know. So it's a lot of a fuss about nothing, and you can actually use DeepSeek in perplexity.ai and your stuff is hosted on an American server. So if you're feeling xenophobic, if you're feeling worried about where your data goes, don't worry about it. It's a storm in a teacup. So that's your DeepSeek.
The summary is, it's just another tool.
Yeah, yeah, fairsies. And then the other thing that I really, you're definitely getting a grinds my gears vibe from me today. I think I'm a bit fed up of all the nonsense.
If you were a dog, you'd be a Rottweiler.
Thank you, thank you. I think. Thanks. So there was a big article that everyone was going on about a little while ago from Microsoft who went, we've done some research and we've discovered that cognitive ability at tasks declines if you use AI. And that's all the anti-AI people have jumped on it. They're like, oh, you see, we knew it. You're going to turn into thick gits if you use AI. I would like to offer a counter stance. I don't know.
So this is about using AI damages the human ability to think critically. Is that right?
Yeah. So if you dig into the article, right, what it's saying is like, if I give you X task, like do X, Y, Z, write a report, this, that, and the other, and you do it yourself, I measure your capability, tick. And then I do the test where I go, now use AI to do that a few times. And I come back and I measure your ability. Your ability has declined, right? So yes, that you can't argue with that. So my counter argument to that is like my ability to use a map has declined since I've been using sat navs. So what? I've been getting to places earlier. I've been using less CO2. I've been using less fuel. I'm less distracted when I'm driving. So if you look at the big picture, that's kind of all right. My wife's mum says, oh, you don't want to lose that skill because one day you really need it. Not really. I don't think so. And, you know, it's not really going to be a problem, is it? The other thing is, like, let's say that I use AI to write reports and crank out work. That means I've got more time to talk to my clients. I've got more time to get involved in strategic work, which is what I really want to do. So I'm actually developing myself because I've got time to develop myself in other areas. So I think if you take a holistic look at it and look at the whole work or life experience, again, storm in a teacup. And people are picking this article up and they're going, oh, it's the death of critical thinking. Our brains are the same brains that they were 500 years ago. Our brains haven't like gone to sludge because of, you know, evolution doesn't go that fast. Everybody, let's chill.
Agreed. And also when I think about it, I would want to counteract that by, you know, when you're using an OpenAI tool to develop some ideas, strategy, new business concepts or what have you, that actually using it as a springboard in the deep research kind of sense feeds ideas that supports your kind of strategic thinking.
Yeah, exactly. There's less cognitive effort. You know, you can get to amazing outcomes and you still own it. There's less cognitive effort if you're using it as a sort of bionic thinking partner. Yeah. I would agree. Yes.
Good.
Oh, I feel calmer now. I think that was inside me and it needed to come out. Thank you for tolerating my
outburst. Less Rottweiler now, more kind of Labrador.
Elon Musk's come out with Grok 3. Let's just chuck that into the mix and go, there's another one. Is that right?
There's another one, yeah. And my take, I don't like him. And does that matter?
In the spirit of balance, I really think Elon is a great guy. And I think what he's doing with Tesla is great. And Elon, if you're listening, you're just a great guy. And basically agree with Lucy. Conversations in the field.
I love it when I'm in the field. So the first one for me, it was during one of our exploration day workshops. So obviously AI is the theme. It's brought everybody it's brought a cross-functional team together discussing various different elements of the business. And of course, you then have some input from sales here and then some input from project management. And there were so many light bulb moments in those conversations where there was kind of cross-pollination of ideas. I guess it kind of went back to the fact that we work in silos. Communication and collaboration is difficult because we're all so busy and head down, bum up situation. And it just got me thinking, AI is a reason, and the interest is all there, that brings people together to actually share ideas, not just how we can use AI, but in order to consider how we're going to use AI to support the business, we need to discuss the elements of the business and the learnings from that into, oh, right, so you're doing that. Oh, well, we've already done that. Or, oh, I didn't know that happened. Or we could use that as a case study. You know, these things started, additional benefits started to come about. And I just thought, you know, there's a lot of talk about AI, the robots and taking away from humans. Here's another argument of how it, as a topic, brings people together that actually promotes better working, better collaboration, better cross-pollination.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, bit of context, we go into organizations ask us for help. Come and sort of show, you know, get us going and sort of kickstart us thinking about this. And I was in the workshop with you, and that, you know, it was a lady, wasn't it, who was like, and you know what, I didn't know what David did or David's team did, because we'd never sort of mapped out. We were doing a customer journey mapping exercise, weren't we, sort of saying what are the moments that matter and how might you apply AI to that. And she found it so invigorating to sort of understand what her colleague's process was. And like, well, I haven't done this before, but it was, AI is like the excuse for it, right? And then as the team gets more effective at using it, they've got more time to hang out.
Exactly. So I just wanted to bring that thought for people to ponder on. AI supports better communication in siloed, perhaps, teams.
Who'd have thought?
There was that one. What about you?
We're doing an immersion journey with a construction consultancy, and there were some metrics that came up because we analyze everything, right? And that's how we're, you know, this is our day job. This is what we do. We analyze everything because we want to be, you know, on point. And so evidence-based is good. So I took the third workshop. So we're doing 8 workshops with these lot. It's like a 2-hour weekly deep dive to sort of bring a team along in terms of AI literacy and competency and being change champions for this stuff. Third workshop, right? So this is the beginning. So after 4 hours, we had a workshop and we sort of said, what's going on in the business? The numbers that came back in terms of what was the balance between the technical conversations, this is how you do this, this is how you do that with Copilot, ChatGPT, the personal transition conversations, like this is my thinking, this is the shift that's happening for me, is the sort of personal transition stuff. And then the conversations about the team change, the effect on the culture of the organization, probably be quite surprising, right? So here are the numbers. I took the transcript of the conversation, dropped them into Data Analyst and ChatGPT. So there's no agenda on my part. 40% technical. How do I do this? Click that. Build a bot, that sort of thing. 30% personal transition, 30% cultural change. So if you look at the journey that a team goes on as they learn how to use the tools, it's roughly 40% technical, 30% personal, and 30% cultural change. That's why prompting workshops don't work. Like, don't get someone in to go, oh, teach us how to prompt, because it's pointless.
Yeah.
The skills fall away.
You can add those together. So it's 60% non-technical.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we were having a conversation with a guy the other day, an IT guy, Lucy, right, who'd built an internal bot. And when he sort of pushed it out, the usage went up. And like, do you remember what happened?
When it was announced and rolled out, there was a spike, interest, new shiny thing. What's this? Immediately followed a drop off and then almost to no use. So there was a reminder. Oh, don't forget, there is this bot that would help you. Again, a peak and then a drop. Yeah. And it's classic, isn't it? It's about positioning. Why? Why will this help you? Why will this benefit you? Why will this solve your problem, save you time? Otherwise, I just revert back to my habit of how
exactly.
I work.
Don't sell the features. Help it. You solve people's problems. I can't keep going back to a car advert that I saw. I think it was a Vauxhall car advert. And it's like, our new car's got a 100 LED matrix headlight. I'm like, right? So? You know, but if they said our new car reduces road accidents by not blinding other drivers, you go, oh, I'll buy that. That's the deal, right? Solving problems. Anyway, the number one metric that came out of it that got me really stoked, and there's a bit of a cheat in there because one of the guys is like an AI master already, so his number skews it a bit. But out of 9 people on this team that we're working with, after just 4 hours of working with us, they saw a 4.6% productivity uplift. Across a year, at this point, if you took that snapshot across a year, that's 40% of a full-time head. Right, but you know that number's just going to go up and up and up. One guy said, I've saved 45 minutes a day. So he was the leader. And then there was another guy behind him saved 3 hours this week. And there was somebody else who was saying, zero, I haven't had time. You're always going to get that. But the team are going to bring each other up. I reckon we're going to get to my guess is by the end of it, and you can hold me to this, 20% productivity uplift in a team.
And that's a tangible outcome.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So they're nearly at the point now where the workshop time, they're getting it back, and that's just, that number's going to go up. So we'll, dear listener, we will keep you abreast of the journey.
What I love about that as well, from a an industry that is heavily tied to governance, regulation around building, etc., compliance, where there has been limited opportunity for changing the way that perhaps things are done, that there is opportunity for elements of innovation using AI. And I think that's really exciting.
Very exciting. You've got to say exciting more in a more excited tone of voice.
I think that's very exciting.
Yeah, you absolutely smashed that. What else? What else we got?
Going back to something that you just mentioned in terms of mapping the client journey or the stakeholder journey in a business to kind of be your starting point for use cases, it's just a phenomenal exercise, isn't it? Because the amount that there are is phenomenal. And people struggle, I think organizations struggle to what are our use cases? What should be our use cases? That's how you identify them. It's not where should we put something shiny? It's where do we have the pain points? Where's the friction? Where's the timely and repetitive and costly elements in the business, in the team, in our individual roles? That's where the use case goes. And it was just a thought that I had of, caught blimey, there's loads.
It's amazing. Actually, we've got a question about this. You know, we said send us your questions, and we've got Ollie on the line with a question, you know, a WhatsApp voice note, and we'll share the details about how you can do this.
Hi, it's Ollie Hopton from Ivy House. My question is there a structural way to create a great use case for different departments so they can really explore how AI can help them in their specific areas of the business?
So our method strategically is we map out the customer experience, right, from being attracted to your business to placing a repeat order. And we say, what are all the moments that matter? And you get a cross-functional team in the room and they sketch out and they build it. And then only then is we map AI onto that. But you could do, if you were doing it with a team, like a finance team or whatever, you just go, what are the moments that matter in our team? And, you know, and you can just approach it like that.
Yeah.
So we're talking flip charts, post-it notes, and you can nail that process in, what, a couple of hours?
Yeah, just big pieces of paper, a great big line across it, and right, start it here and end it there. And it gets very messy. But again, that's where new ideas come from in terms of, oh, I didn't know that you were doing that. You don't need to, because we do that here. You know, so there's already, or straight away, you can find ways to streamline processes. And it's just a generally a really good, healthy, fun exercise from a team perspective, but also to consider improvements across the business.
Absolutely, absolutely. Another conversation in the field was, so yes, our day job is AI. We have a long history of leadership development, and a couple of customers have said to us, could you do a bit of leadership development? And we're like, yeah, of course we can. So we sort of pulled together a product which is sort of AI powered leadership development, and that is going great guns. What's different about it is there's no discovery, right? So you can go in and just give me all your data, and we'll analyze it with the participants, because we can do that really fast now. We're using the tools. What about the program design? Don't worry about it. Like, as long as we've got like a bunch of buckets, you know, a bunch of days where we can get everyone together, we can actually build the program as we go using the AI tools. So there's so many cool things you can do with the AI tools, and I'm starting to see more people in the L&D world do this. You can do like role play using ChatGPT. You can build program KPIs using Microsoft Copilot. There's so much cool stuff you can do, and you know, we're embarking on a couple of projects like that, and we will keep you posted about how they go. So if there's L&D folks in your life, get them listening to this podcast, because this is going to blow their knickers off.
And I love the fact that doing this really tailors the learning according to development needs of an individual, rather than just an overall kind of cohort, if you like. And the fact that it gets buy-in right from the start, because it's based on metrics and data and insights, and for those individuals to say, actually, yeah, that would be really useful for me. Yeah,
exactly. So we kick off with a meeting with the CEO, where all the participants interview the CEO. They have a rummage around in some organizational performance metrics, and they decide together what the leadership population needs to be better at. and then we build the program based on that. So they are owning it from the get-go, and learning becomes part of their day job. They learn how to learn, and they also learn how to use AI tools as they go. It's win-win-win. I think we should be charging them more. I've decided we need to go back and charge them more.
It just makes it interesting and exciting, doesn't it? It changes things up a little bit in terms of how to deliver and how to engage a team, and for it to stick, because that's the most important thing, isn't it? We can all go out for a day and listen to someone talk at us, mm-hmm. and then forgotten it 2 days later as we go back to the day job with heads down, bums up.
Exactly. So if you're an L&D leader and you're thinking, it's a bit of an existential threat, don't worry, you're still needed. You know, you still needed to sort of preside over the program. But this is the holy grail, right? Facilitating organizational performance rather than serving up training. We will let you know how it goes.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. Finally, one from me. It was a conversation last week, actually, just following in from the lovely Anna Tanner. Don't know if you remember the wonderful interview that we had with her from Flagship Housing. Just a check-in, really, to see how things were progressing with the HR team and their AI genius and capability. And I'm just so super, super impressed. She said that the AI group is now starting a really exciting phase of testing their own AI agent.
Who taught them that? Not us. We've lit a fire, which is exciting.
Absolutely lit a fire. Developed and helped kind of build confidence and capability so that they can have a play with the tools and see what the art of the possible is. So they're testing the AI agent, but with a view to launching that, which has the potential to save so much money for their business, especially where you've got thousands of people in an organization.
Yeah.
And HR teams may find themselves at the end of a phone call with unnecessary and sometimes silly kind of questions and requests when information should be readily available out there. But, you know, people are lazy or can't find it in the SharePoint, whatever. So this agent is going to be absolutely fantastic for them. But what I loved is she said the AI exploration day, the impact of that session has gone way beyond just one day. It's actually shaped their ongoing approach to AI innovation for their HR team.
Amazing. So I've noticed, you know, we've mentioned our products and our activities a fair bit in this podcast. Like, feel free to go into ChatGPT and design your own AI exploration day. Like, we ain't selling. We just love doing it and we love talking about it. Just to be clear.
It just goes to show that, and if you remember, there were certainly people in the team who were hesitant, that felt that they weren't technically minded. Some people felt scared of it. Some people felt like it was cheating. But that day helped to support and align and to reframe thinking and light a huge fire in terms of the potential with this. And they've obviously, from that point, picked it up, run with it. And that's what it's all about, to be actually doing it and seeing results.
Do you think Anna's one of our favourites?
Lovely.
She is great. She is great.
Lovely.
She's making it happen. She's making it happen. And that's why we love her so much. So Adventures in AI, this arms race, right, where everybody seems to be getting out the same features as quick as they can. And so Google Gemini was first with deep research, then Perplexity followed straight after by doing deep research. And I've, you know, people in the US, because the US gets everything first, have been going on about ChatGPT deep research. The polls are showing that ChatGPT deep research is the most popular. I've played with it this morning and it is unbelievable. It's really good. So what I mean by that is, you can, if you combine the cleverness of the O3 model in ChatGPT, which is the sort of thinking model, you know, with the ability to go out to the interweb and find sources of information, it will think its way through and adjust its research process as it goes. So you give it a problem and it will just work through the problem and write you a one pager. Well, in one example, it was 15 pages. It's like you're scratching your head about, like, should I move house? Should I wait till the old person dies and give us some money to get a bigger house? What sort of mortgage do we need? Can we afford, you know, all that kind of stuff. Just dump it into ChatGPT, hit the deep research button, and what it comes back with is amazing. It is unbelievable.
Where would people find the deep research button? And I'm just also a bit conscious that, you know, we've mentioned O3 and Mini and deep research.
So Google Gemini is, like, you know, a large language model. Perplexity is the same. Perplexity started out as a sort of a research model, so they had a bit of an advantage there. With ChatGPT, the button just popped up today. So when I went onto the interweb and went into it, it was there. I was waiting for it, and I've had a go on it. The biggest challenge is like getting the exam question as tidy as possible, because it will go away and research massive stuff. So if you don't know what the right thing to ask it is, if you don't give it the right context, then it's just going to run away and give you a bunch of junk. So that's my number one tip. Like, it's going to save, if you're an analyst or a researcher, this is just going to do your job for you. It's amazing. And Sam Altman from OpenAI reckons that deep research can already perform the same tasks as roughly 5% of the working population. So it's big, it's massive. It's massively helped me because I put what we're up to into it and said, give me a strategy. And it's given me some really, really strong thought provokers that you've seen the output of already today, Lucy.
And so I concur. It is absolutely superb to open your mind, different ideas, different opportunities, and get you thinking. And then you can obviously continue to use ChatGPT to refine and springboard and build on.
Yeah, exactly. And like 2025 is supposed to be the year of the agent. Like, it's like a little robot that sits on your desk and you go, write an email to Bob, and it does it for you. It's not that binary, you know. So another thing that we've been experimenting is this sort of it's creeping in. So that Google Gemini now will sort of go and look at Google for you and YouTube and stuff like that. So I tested it and said, plan me an itinerary to fly to Italy to take my son mountain biking, blah, blah, blah. And it just came up with a beautiful itinerary because it can look at Google Maps, YouTube, and all those sort of things. It does the same as you would. Do you know what I mean? It's like, stay in this hotel. It's got a stunning view. I've looked on YouTube, and you're like, wow, it's like a human being. So I think this agent idea, it's going to creep in slowly, and we won't really see it coming. But before you know it, big chunks of our job, we can just outsource.
And so there's a benefit there in terms of using the Google's tool because of its access and capability to other Google products. So it'll be interesting to see the others kind of catching up with that.
When OpenAI releases Operator, you can bet your bottom dollar Microsoft will be like, you're not clicking on our apps. You're not using our apps, matey boy. So we'll be really interested to see how that plays out.
So super excited to launch a new segment. It's called How To. How To.
How To.
How To. How To.
How To.
How To. How to,
how to,
how to,
how to,
how to,
how to, how to. We won't necessarily go into the fine details of how to use the models and stuff like that, because we're way more strategic than that, right? We're about adoption. But this counts because you can get a lot of traction with this framework we're going to share. So I've got a voice note here from Jeremy at Spinnaker. Allow me to play it. He's putting a couple of questions on the table.
So working with a client who used Copilot, and I'm noticing a couple of barriers to them getting the most out of the tool. One is a fear of putting sensitive information into Copilot and where it goes. And the other is trying to get the perfect outcome straight away. So they'll put a request in and then they'll get something back, and either it won't really deliver what they needed to deliver, and so they just dismiss it and do it themselves, or they'll just take it at face value and then put it into their slide deck and it's poor quality. So how do I sort of overcome both of these barriers?
Great question. You are now a friend of the show. That was a great question.
Well, there's two things there. If it doesn't perform, if it comes back incorrect and you don't trust it, and we know that, unfortunately, Copilot can be a little bit inconsistent and clunky, it was the word I was trying to find, you're going to go, ah, nah. Not going to use it again. Or the opposite is, if you just accept what it gives you as verbatim or fact or correct and then use that, you do run the risk of looking a bit like a div and getting things wrong.
Just to rewind a bit to the first question, if you know, we had somebody say to us, I work in HR, if I'm writing redundancy letters, I don't want to do that in Copilot because I don't want it popping up on someone else's screen. Take that question straight to your chief information officer and say, what's the deal? Because in some organizations, we hear them saying, everything's indexed in SharePoint, don't worry about it. You know, so all the permission levels are already set and the AI will respect that. Whereas we've heard some people say, actually, stuff is starting to leak through because it's not properly filed and indexed. Take it to the CIO, do not pass go, do not collect £200. That is a question for IT.
with Copilot because, of course, it sits within 365's environment. So you've got that perception or what in terms of security within the organization. But the question here was, what if information I'm doing, I don't want to get out to other people in the organization? And that's where it really does need to be a question to the organization's IT.
Exactly, exactly. And then to the second part of Jeremy's question, how do you, Lucy, push past that using it like Google, one-shot garbage kind of vibe situation type thing?
Well, exactly. There needs to be an understanding of what a large language model is, first and foremost, and what it isn't, how it works. And when you know that, you understand how and why it can produce garbage or hallucinate. And that's what happens with the AI slot when people go, write me a report on this, go. We teach a framework which we have called managed, which we absolutely live and breathe by. It will change the way that you work with the model and the output that you get from the model. It's really, in simple terms, about communication and delegation with the model. So M is map out the context, what you're trying to do. A is for the aim, you know, share the aim that you're trying to achieve. N is for necessary detail. The more information you can give and share, you know, we say, consider it like a new intern that's just walked through the door. You wouldn't say, could you write me a report on X, Y, Z, go, because that person would be, what sort of report? How long was it need to be? And when they said X, Y, Z, did they mean this bit? And where would I go to find that information? Is it over here? Is it over there? Necessary detail. A, we have a second A, and that's for align. And this is often a point which a lot of people miss. It's totally allowed, acceptable, and in human context, it would be something you would always do. Align, check that the model understands what you're asking for and what you want it to do before it runs away and goes to the wrong cupboard, the wrong library, or produces a painting when you wanted a document. Align, do you understand the task ahead?
And that alignment phase, like, number one, it keeps the model on point, but it also saves you a bunch of rework. If you're writing a report, right, then you're going to expend cognitive and emotional energy fact-checking it and researching it just to go back in and give it some feedback. And so you're going to have this, like, drain on your brain. But if you can absolutely nail the first four stages and get to that align bit where it's actually giving you the plan and demonstrating that it agrees with you, you know, that it's going to give you what you want, less rework, less strain on your brain, you can move on to the next task. So it's a super important point of the process.
Map out the context, share the aim, give it the necessary detail, and then align. So those are the four really key things. G is for generate or go. Let's have a look at where we are. E is for evolve. Yeah, basically iterate feedback to get it to the point of the destination.
And that's the D.
We're done. We're good. AI literacy should mean that you can work through that managed process to the first align part. Might be a couple of little bit of feedback at that point. Then press go. Maybe one little bit of feedback then, but really that should be it.
This framework helps you to, you know, make you a better delegator, right? Because you're, you know, if you were talking to a colleague, you'd go, map out the context. Here's the aim. Here's the necessary detail. Do you understand me? Great. Okay, go and do the thing. Come back and, you know, da, da, da. So let's do a worked example, right? So a lot of people go to it and they go, write me a LinkedIn post about bananas or whatever, right? And it gives you a garbage, vanilla, unk emoji sort of thing. So you would go to it and say, hi, I'm a banana importer and I want to increase my reach on LinkedIn. Therefore, I want a thought leadership post about banana production. Great. Mapped out the context. Share the aim. Give me a medium-sized, provocative LinkedIn article, which has a call to action at the end. Brilliant. Give it the necessary detail. This is what's happening in the banana import world. You know, they're too green at the moment. They're too expensive. The sticker comes off and sticks on your teeth, all that sort of stuff. Give it the detail. Play it back to me. What am I trying to achieve here and how am I trying to do it? Brilliant. Great. You've got it. What's the plan for the article? Great. Got it. Generate. Tweak this bit, tweak that bit, boom, we're at the destination. And using that method, you can get your LinkedIn post, whatever it is you're creating, data analysis, report, whatever task it is you're approaching, pretty much to 95% done before you need to do any edits, like 95 to 100%. And people are on, you know, certain media at the moment going, oh, you know, the new models, you need to give them context. You need to give them all of it. Get everything in your head, out of your head and into the model, and you'll be amazed at what you can do.
And that's not a prompt. is it? Where are we looking at prompting workshops, how to generate the best prompt as such? This is getting out of your head. It is literally giving all of the information. And this is where dictating into the model or on the voice function makes it so much easier, because you can literally just speak it through. Okay, so I need to do this, or I want to remember to make sure that we mention this, and I'm doing this because, and obviously it's a lot quicker than typing as well. So that is our how to communicate with the model that you use, ChatGPT or Copilot, to get the best output that also sounds more like you. But actually, that's led me on to, we should do tone of voice in the next how to.
Yeah, we should do tone of voice. And here's the good news, that you can teach the models, whichever model you use, how to write in your tone of voice in 15 minutes. And we'll back that. We'll show you how. If I was listening at this point and I've gone, you've pretty much worked your way through all the benchmarks, I'd probably be expecting us to throw forward to the next episode. Don't know if you can help.
Next episode is actually our 10th episode. So I'm thinking we should have some sort of party, or at least, you know, put a hat on.
Well, let's go and get a prawn ring from Iceland. And if you're listening outside of the UK, that's a disgusting food from a horrible supermarket.
That's the first thing that came to your head when I mentioned party. Anyway, shush, I'm trying to finish my role. Next episode, we have CEO Mark Brewster, who's a fantastic fella who runs an organisation called Explory, a global SaaS business that specialises in performance metrics. It's a super interesting. Performance metrics, helping global organizations benchmark events both internally and across their industry. But the key point, and the reason we've invited Mark to speak, is he's all over AI. He's doing it. He's living it. He understands culture around it, the psychological safety needed to experiment with the tools, and he's working on a plan. So we want to learn from Mark. We're going to be sharing more key metrics and results from some of this year's AI immersion programs, because I think that's really important to be considering some of the return, the outputs, the actual kind of stats.
Yeah, and it's useful, because a lot of leadership teams are kind of going, we know we need to get involved, but we don't know where to start. The more we can sort of just put evidence in front of you, or give you that encouragement to go back to your team and go, we need to get cracking with this. Yeah, so you exactly. know, we want to be evidence driven.
So we've just said we're going to share how to, in terms of your tone of voice, for more authentic communication outputs.
The correct word is authenticalizing.
I would struggle with that, and tickle would come out somewhere. And we're going to share some insights on the AI strategic roadmap.
That's what you can expect from us. Thank you very much. If you got to the end, here's your reward. Bye.
I always have the last say. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. That's a lovely time.
Bye.
Bye-bye. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Bye.
Are we still going? Bye. Welcome to the AI. AI.